I think people see this idea of learning as you sat there kind of having to research how to do something. And at least in my instances, that's often not the case. I think for us, a lot of the learnings, let's be honest, they came from like clients giving us a really hard time. They came from things going really wrong at the 11th hour and having to just fix it. And they don't come from comfortable moments where you're able to sit there and educate yourself.
Are you in your 20s in a job you really don't like? Are you retired and bored? Are you stuck in a rut and can't see a way out? Fact is, the biggest barrier to getting onto the next curve is you. That's right. It is never too late or too early to be who you want to be. My name is Dee Sterling. I'm a businesswoman, a presenter, and we are back with our new show, Second Carvers. We will reframe familiar problems and let you take control. Are you a second carver ready to be ignited? My guest today is the spectacular second carver, Tom Arden. This is a very exciting episode. We have filmed from the Laslett Hotel in Notting Hill, which is absolutely fabulous. You all have to go. Also, Tom will be returning later in the series to update us on his next curve and his journey to get there. A huge welcome to my fabulous guest today, Tom Arden. Tom, so great to see you.
It's lovely to see you, Dee.
So Tom, you are an entrepreneur, you're co-founder of Pengarna, a renowned creative content and innovation agency, bringing brands to life. We are going to have such an interesting conversation today, and I am super, super psyched because you are at ground zero on a new curve in your life. And in a way, you're in a sort of laboratory situation at the moment. So we are going to explore what got you to here. And some episodes from now, you're going to come back on the show and talk to us about the roads that you've been down, the conversations that you've had, the micro and mega steps that you've taken, and where you've gotten to on the journey of the next curve. So this is really, 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 really exciting. And I can't wait to hear all about it both today and further down the track. So first and foremost, you know, as you and I've discussed, we are living in extraordinary times. There's massive change happening in the world. Things are moving at ever-increasing speed. And in some ways, how we live today, how we work today, is not how we're going to live or work tomorrow. Almost literally, right? There are many, many major concerns that preoccupy lots of us, from the climate emergency through to isolation. And in my view, those two aren't detached from one another. Technology is moving incredibly rapidly. And I know you're a big technologist, as am I, with current obsession around generative AI. But there are lots of concerns with that too. So all of that to say, things are moving very, very fast on the mega highway of life for all of us in the developed world. And at Second Carvers, part of our mission is really to share the stories of people that seek challenges, seek change, seek reinvention, often embracing difficult situations, frankly, to get onto the next phase of their life, and showing all of us that we can take a jump, that we can prepare ourselves for the changing world by engaging with it. So, Tom, I would love to go back. You know, you grew up in London, your parents are entrepreneurs, you studied biology because you loved science. And when you finished your studies, you got on a plane to Hong Kong. Can we go back to that point?
Yes. So how old am I at that point? I'm probably, let's say, 21, 22. I've just left university. I've studied biology, which I probably knew I was never going to be a scientist, but I think I was one of those people that grew up not really knowing what they wanted to do and be, and obviously a bit scared by that, looking around at everyone else who had these career paths and trajectories they were on since they were 16. And my parents actually tried to convince me not to go to university, but I was like, no, I need to go and get a degree, get something in there. And I studied biology purely because I think I'm just very interested in finding out how things work to a degree, and then I'm satisfied. So I didn't want to go and do medicine, but just something where I get the really interesting understanding of such a whole gamut of ideas. Anyway, left university, knew, like I said, I didn't want to go into anything scientific, but I think, as a lot of people do, I think I felt a lot of pressure from people's, I guess, expectation of me, not in that I was going to have to be successful or do anything crazy, but in that they had an idea or a box that they put me in. And I felt like I probably had to stick slightly within that box. So even though really in my last couple of years of university, I knew that I wanted to move into a more creative field of like commercials and advertising and things like that.
How did you know that? Because here's the thing, what does anyone know, right?
Yeah.
And long gone are the days where people went into one role and stayed there for 40 years, right? Like that whole model has been completely shattered, right? And the fact is, you know, we know neurologically from, well, hopefully the whole of our lives, neuroplasticity is having an impact on us because we're active, right? But certainly until, you know, mid-20s, maybe a little bit older, the brain is moving, it's settling, it's forming. We are becoming the person we are going to grow into, right? So I personally feel that very few people know exactly what their calling is if they have one, because they have unboundaried interests, right? If you're really open about it. And in your case, how did you know that that whole creative piece was interesting and exciting to you?
Oh, I feel like you opened up so many points there and questions. I think from my side, I firstly completely agree that I don't think anyone can sit there and know necessarily what you're going to want to do your entire life. But I think we all grow up with some slightly, we all essentially grow up with a script, I think, that's been written by our parents, by the closest people around us as we grow up inadvertently. But we all have this kind of pre-written destiny, essentially, that's like a checkbox of the things we need to go and do in our lives to be happy. The kind of, I would see it as we all really at a very, very young age, we have this map that shows us how we need to live the best life in the best ways. And I totally, and so for me, I think that a lot of the people who at a young age, let's say, know what they want to do, perhaps have just a very clear checklist. And on that checklist is, let's say, having a career for 40 years in a certain field, because that's the blueprint that's been left for them by their parents. I grew up in a very different house where both my parents are entrepreneurs. My mum especially has changed jobs what feels like every 4 years.
So we love her.
she is fabulous with the blue hair. But I definitely never grew up with that idea of sticking in one job, one industry forever. If anything, that was completely alien to me. So when I say that's what I wanted to do, I definitely mean at that moment in time, that is what I felt a calling towards. And for me, what that means was I was in the, well, actually specifically what it was I was, at the time, I just started honestly playing around with the camera a lot. And every holiday I would go on, I would film something, no matter how silly and how small. And then I would go home and just, it was one of the few times in my life I found myself really applying myself to something, kind of regardless of what the outside world's perception of it or demand from me was. So no one was asking me or telling me to do this. I just found myself sitting in a room for 2 weeks, painstakingly editing a video of literally just a family holiday to just try and make it emotive, try and like make something that I would give to somebody and they'd be like, oh, Tom, it's so amazing. It makes me cry. And so there was something wrapped up in that that I really enjoyed, regardless of what it was. At the same time, I do have family members who are involved in like commercials and advertising. My granddad was, my uncle was, my mum was. So to me, it was just, okay, I have a bit of a passion for something. And what is a job that I know that exists in the world or an industry that I know exists that I can plug that into? You know, there probably could have been a million things that I went and did, but that was the thing that I knew existed that I was like, okay, I think that's the most immediate connection between what I am interested in and what I can get paid to do.
And also, you know, it strikes me, you know, referencing that little beautiful example of you spending 2 weeks painstakingly, lovingly, without any awareness, I suspect, of time or anything else that was going on, editing this poetic vision of the family trip or whatever. You know, that's a real state of flow, isn't it? Like you literally don't notice the rest. You're in it. It's consuming your concentration, you know, in the distracted world we're in even more today, just really getting something done because it's part of who you are intrinsically, right? It's kind of like that seed inside that's growing and flourishing because you're in the flow of that activity. So when you went to Hong Kong, Tom, you know, you'd rocked up, you were a new graduate as such. How did you get going? Because it's one thing to have a bit of a passion. It's another to be in another country. Okay, you know, you could say most people there speak English, but everything's different.
Yeah.
What was your starting point to get you doing stuff that you wanted to do?
I think I was probably energized slightly by the idea that when I was in London, and I think I'd had about 6 months after I'd left uni, where I knew that I wanted to take this shift and this pivot, but I just felt like I would look silly to people trying to call myself a videographer or call myself a creative when that was so not what anyone had known of me. And it's not what I'd kind of known, or it's not what I had down on paper. And it sounds ridiculous for me to say that now, whatever I am now, almost 10 years later. But at the time, it was a very compelling reason to apply for consultancies, let's just say. I then find myself in Hong Kong, and I think I suddenly found myself surrounded by people who didn't know me, no one who knew my background, a world of work out there who also didn't know who I was. And therefore, I found it, I think, a lot less intimidating and less of a jump to be able to sit in a room and say that I was a videographer, say whatever I was, because at least I kind of believed it inside. And these other people didn't have any predisposition to me. So great, I could do it. And I think that energy pushed me at the start and gave me that initial, you know, kind of fuck it, let's, or not swear word, screw it, let's do it. And then, but I would say that initial probably 3 months out there, I was out there for 6 months, was probably in a very specific way, probably the hardest part of work I've ever done in my life, because it was this moment where I think we're so used to getting like quite immediate positive feedback in our lives and validation in whatever it is that we're doing. And for me, that initial 3 months was, I had one good video that I could say I'd made. And it was, again, of a family holiday. Like, I'd never actually done a job. And I had to sit there day in, day out from like 8 a.m. through to about 7 p.m., literally finding any English-speaking business I could on the island of Hong Kong or nearby and just spamming them everywhere, like anywhere I could find a trace of them online, and just trying to get someone to give me work. And it was probably a solid 2 months before anyone actually gave me a chance to do anything. So it was...
Yes. Tom, just interject, but I think this is really, really important, because the fact is, you know, one of my big things is get out of your head, get out of your thinking, and get going, get acting, even if it's rubbish, you know, just get going, right? Like one of my dear friends and guests, who's a serial entrepreneur, she had an idea to launch a business some years ago, and she made a prototype when she was on holiday. And, it was a bit average, but it was kind of, for her, a visualization of what she wanted to do. And she had it on her desk the whole time. And just, she was making and creating, right? And you have to get on the track and you have to put the graft in, right? And the fact is, having worked and lived for many years now, some of the people I know have become the most successful. And what does that mean? But in the metrics that society identifies with today, it's simply because they got up and did it, right? And they kept going. And it wasn't an idea in their head, or they were expecting someone to come flying through the door. And, you know, you did what, and you didn't probably think of it at the time like this, but you did what entrepreneurs do. You got up, you banged on the doors, you kept going, because you knew that something would land, right? Which is ultimately what happened. So you're in Hong Kong, you spent 2 months banging on doors. When did you start to get traction?
If I look at also the people on my side that I see as successful in whatever it is they're doing, and again, totally define that by any metric you want to, I think the thing, or maybe it's the thing that allows you to really take that first step of sending that first email out to somebody, is the genuine like internal belief that what you are doing is going to have an effect, is actually the right thing, that you are going to be able to deliver on whatever it is you're saying you're going to do. The most successful people I know are the people who genuinely, really, truly believe in what they're doing. And you can say that for someone who is entrepreneurial or if they just have a job. And I think for me, I was able to kind of take those steps and push for a couple of months, because I knew that as soon as I landed a client, I genuinely believed, although it was a tiny thing, it wasn't changing the world, but I genuinely believed that what I wanted to give them and sell to them was genuinely going to help them, and I was genuinely going to be able to deliver it. So I think that belief is a very essential thing you need to take that first step and stop it just becoming something you're thinking about doing, where maybe it's a one day, and turn it into the actual thing that you are then sat there doing that day.
I think that's so true. And I also think that, you know, I always say, if you can see it, you can be it, you know, and even if it feels like very far down the track, you can then go, okay, how do we work back? Like, what's step one, step two, et cetera, et cetera. So Tom, if we fast forward, had this incredible experience and a lot of learning in Hong Kong, you came back, you inserted yourself into the creative world, and a little while later, you and your co-founder launched PenGarner. Now, you know, you and I can look at PenGarner today. It's extremely well established. It's renowned for its creative content and its innovation, you know, bringing these incredible brands to light through lots of multidisciplinary creative processes and techniques and amazing technology. And, you know, some of the brands that people will know, such as Ren, that we love, and Pengaea, and A Plastic Planet, of course, and Miriam, and on and on and on. The list goes on. But back then, can we just sit with that period when you were thinking of launching something and how it came to life?
Yes. Yeah, totally. I think I came back from Hong Kong now as an established, in my head, creative, where I was like, cool, I've got some work under my belt. I don't feel bizarre now doing this in London because it's who I see myself as, let's say. I come back, I do an initial stint actually at a commercials production company. And with what makes sense with my upbringing of having entrepreneurial parents, I immediately felt frustrated at the idea of hierarchy. I saw this like 6-year timeline in my head in front of me as to how I was going to progress through the ranks to the part I actually wanted to be doing. And so pretty quickly, within about a couple of months, I was like, right, this isn't for me, not going to be doing this. At that stage, I started working actually with BuzzFeed quite a lot and a lot of their brand partnerships through them. And so that was the beginning of starting to give me actually really solid, consistent exposure to brands, their strategies, how we'd execute the projects, how they would work on things, media world, etc. And I worked on that for, I want to say, a year or two. Then at that stage, I actually met the person who was going to become my business partner for a totally different thing. He used to be a pop star, and he was going to kind of step back into the world of music. And we were actually doing a location scout for a possible music video shoot for him. And it was only on the train on the way back from doing the initial recce that we'd done that we suddenly started discussing this idea that I know I'd been percolating on for a while, of just this humongous gap in the content market, in, let's call it, the creative agency market, though I don't think I even really truly understood what any of those terms even meant. That was just around kind of this more, at the time we would have called it some sort of like middle tier execution, where, you know, I'd experienced the world of like $1 million ads, didn't like it. I'd worked in the world of, you know, freelance individuals working for brands where it was good, but it wasn't plugging into this like greater idea of the marketing. So it really wasn't actually being that effective. And this huge gap that it kind of existed in the middle. And I think I'm always someone who is looking for that opportunity. I actually kind of completely forgot it at the time, but for about 6 months before, I'd really been sat there thinking, I want to launch some sort of production agency company, but I need to find a business partner to do it with. As soon as I actually met the person that would become my business partner, I completely forgot that that's what I'd been looking for. But luckily, I think he matched and even exceeded my level of, fuck it, let's just do it. Let's just go and launch this thing. And so within a couple of weeks, we'd come up with a name. I think we came up with a name on the train. We created a deck, like a sales deck, and we just started going out there to different people. And I think we were lucky that quite quickly we landed a couple of our first clients. And then also luckily, as is anything, there's, you know, you can be totally prepared for anything. I think you need that slight luck and timing. We landed a couple of clients that went on to do some pretty incredible things quite quickly through the lockdown and things like that. But that was then our next challenge, which kind of ends that first initial, cool, we've come together, we've started a company. I want to say less than 6 months into it, a worldwide lockdown happened because of COVID, which definitely kind of posed another set of challenges.
What was the biggest challenge with COVID on the business and how you operated? Because it was obviously, I mean, no one knew what that looked like. No one knew how long it was going to go on for. And it impacted people in all sorts of ways. But what was the biggest challenge for you?
I got two answers for that. I think the first biggest challenge was, I mean, literally, we were a content agency that required being in person to do model shoots in studios. And so suddenly it meant we had to rethink of our entire content creation process, which is completely what I would put down a lot of our then long-term success to, was the fact that we created a new way to make content that was kind of cheaper, but cooler and better, more functional than what a lot of our competitors were doing. So actually what turned out to be our initial struggle, because of this incredible team that we were able to put together, led, I think, to what was the key to our success moving forward. I think one of the other big challenges, though, was around having some sort of balance, because I think both myself and my business partner would say it was a very, very intense time, which I think, again, also probably led to the success of the company in the long run, because we weren't distracted. But it also meant we were working literally 20-hour days for months on end to kind of catch up to where we wanted to be and the work we wanted to be doing, which was great because we had the opportunity. But I think also led to probably, a lot of stress that maybe I wouldn't put myself through in the future.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure. And I think a lot of people, you know, of course, there was a whole myriad of people who were not able to work and were, you know, coping with that, some happily, some less so. And then there were other people like you and me and many who were chained to the bumper and adapting to different circumstances. And, you know, you learn through these experiences, right? When you think about, you know, the journey, launching the business, dealing with the enormous titanic impact of COVID at multiple levels and coming through the other end, what did you learn about yourself as a person during that process?
Oof, a great question. I think I learned that I'm not amazing at prioritizing different things in my life that aren't just whatever is providing the most immediate pressure in that exact moment and letting that take my attention. I think in a weird way, I think things that happened during COVID are probably some of the reasons I'm doing what I'm doing now in kind of taking a bit of a gap and a bit of space, because, you know, I would love to sit here and yes, I would never say I regret doing what we did, because it led to the success of the company and so many highs and so much enjoyment and such an incredible experience that I would never, ever want to take back. But I also look at it as a moment of an incredible extreme of, for whatever reason, having this incredible amount of drive towards something that meant I did also sacrifice a lot of other experiences and a lot of other things at that time. For instance, a lot of my friendships suffered and broke during that time, which I know a lot of people experienced in COVID because we couldn't see each other. But I think it took, in my instance, you know, a best friend really sitting me down and saying, you're about to lose a lot more than I think you're going to. So I think there was a level of extreme that I took it to that I know my business partner had to as well, that I would never want to go back to that, because I don't see any reward from work that is ever going to be as great as, you know, sacrificing, especially for me, what's most important, my relationship with myself and with those family and friends that are just always going to be the long-term people there for you.
100%. And I think it really, you know, it makes us even more than in previous times think about the world that we occupy, how we live in the world, how we operate and so forth, which we're going to come on to. But Tom, I would love to sort of go a little bit further down the road. You relatively recently have decided, as you just referenced, to stand back a little bit and take a bit of a step back and look at the horizon. Now, this is really you and us now with you, putting a step onto the new curve, right? Without it being all written in gold on a wall, without a prescribed destination. Can you talk me through your instinct, your inner voice, what was going on that led you to this point of, you know, consciously, affirmatively deciding to take a step back for a bit?
In the simplest form, I think I just had a clear realization that it wasn't what I wanted to be doing anymore. And it's kind of as simple as that. I mean, I think I also found myself in a position where those relationships that I'd strained in the past were much stronger. And I found myself in a very stable place in other areas of my life that made me kind of look at this one a bit more closely and think, okay, why am I actually doing what I'm doing? And do I want to continue doing it? And I think it was a pretty resounding answer for me that it wasn't what I wanted to be doing anymore. And that was through nothing necessarily negative. I think for me, I, having now had a bit of time and space to look at why I do what I do, I think I, when it comes to work, let's say, I'm not motivated by money. I'm not motivated by status. I'm not motivated by legacy. I'm motivated. Sure, there's a financial element of I need to be paid to afford what I want to do in my life, but I'm much more motivated by having this challenge of getting something, whatever it is, from like a zero, ground zero, let's say, to let's say level 10. I'm not maybe necessarily the person that gets it from 10 to 100, but that idea of taking something that didn't exist and creating value out of nothing, I think it's what I've seen my parents do growing up. And I think it's where I see the challenge essentially that I wanted to know if I could do. And yes, I had done different iterations of things in the past, but I think Pengana was the first real example of taking nothing, an idea on a train, and creating, you know, a lot of value in something from nothing. And between me and my business partner, I think we did that more successfully than I think we thought we were going to even. But I think we'd also reached a point where there was so much incredible learning in those first 4 years. It just felt absolutely nonstop. And I think maybe in that final year, I think it felt like the learning really slowed down. And that's the stage where I almost think, you know, if you were a startup, that's the stage where you'd probably bring in another CEO who has that experience to take it from level 10 to level 100. And I think for me, I realized we'd probably hit the point where I had learned what I wanted to learn. That was starting to slow down. And I think it was the time for me to step back and see what other opportunities were going to be out there for me. I really think that life is very long. I feel like we always hear the idea that life is short, but for me, life is really, really long. And this was this one incredible challenge, but I'm lucky that I'm still, well, I would define myself as still a bit young. And so I know there are a lot of opportunities coming up ahead, which are going to have huge rewards in getting from that 0 to 10. And I think I wanted to step back just to see what is the next one of those that's going to come along and essentially make the space for it to actually come in.
100%. And we're going to dive into how you're even going about that, because that's not as easy as it sounds. But Tom, tell me, when you think about Pengana and all the adventures, and, you know, speaking from personal experience, like some of the worst moments in a way are kind of the best, right? Because you learn what you're really made of. You learn all the old cliches abound, but you understand that you've got extraordinary levels of grit and resilience and determination. You understand that you're a solutionist because, you know, you find a way through. But give me one of the highs and the feeling that you had on that high.
I think the highs for me always come from, it totally always comes from when you've learned so much and finally you see it go right. Because I think people see this idea of learning as you sat there kind of having to research how to do something. And at least in my instances, that's often not the case. I think for us, a lot of the learnings, let's be honest, they came from like clients giving us a really hard time. They came from things going really wrong at the 11th hour and having to just fix it. And they don't come from comfortable moments where you're able to sit there and educate yourself. They come from incredible levels of discomfort. So the highs for me always came off the back of that, when you would see all of that pain and all of that learning that you had to go through suddenly create this incredible reward. That reward most often not being, again, financial, but being a client sat in front of you just in awe of the work that you've created. You know, sitting in meetings and just realizing all of this information that you're giving people and genuinely seeing the value that you're kind of giving that you know you couldn't have done 2 years ago that suddenly you're able to have for people. And I know that I think, you know, one of the absolute highs came honestly not too long ago, kind of at the start of this year, where we were working on a project that unfortunately I can't talk much about, but it was an incredible project around developing not an advert, not a piece of content, but literally a very large physical place that really just brought so much learning in, combined with someone who had equal, I think, creative appetite to just challenge whatever we were able to do. And just to sit there after that meeting, especially with someone like a business partner, where you guys go through so much together that I think people really don't understand. It is so much like an intense marriage. And so to be able to have someone that you can share those highs with, I think, honestly, let's put that down as one of the highs, I think, is to do it with somebody that can understand the growth that you have both gone through.
And by the way, that is such an important word. And I was just about to say it before you did, growth. You know, all these things are growth. They're all moments of growth, some micro, some mega, but all additive. And I also think that, and I really believe this, and I talk quite a lot about it, all the experiences we have are additive, you know? And you can bring learning from everything you've done into the next activity, the next role, the next build, whatever it is, right? Because it helps us develop range. And that sort of exploration, those experiences, those dire moments when you're like, you know, all of that helps you handle, manage, deal, because there are patterns, even though life's shifting very rapidly with the, you know, impact every which way of technology, but you bring that with you, you know, and I guess as humans are, you know, where technology hasn't caught up yet is our interconnection with one another, our empathy, our relationships, et cetera, et cetera. So, Tom, can we sit in that place where you were clear, absolutely clear as day, that you're stepping back and you're going to look out. I know for you, this has not been, I'm going to do this, 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 and this, which is what some people do. And sometimes people struggle when they actively make that decision to step back because they feel they've got to have this diary full. They feel they've got to be, you know, doing what I call faux busyness. You know, it's like being busy, but not really being that busy. They feel they've got to be have a title, right? Because our identity caught up in titles and the place that that gives us in the world, the platform that that, you know, superficially offers us vis-a-vis the rest of the, you know, those around us and humanity in general. How, what was your starting point for looking out?
Oh, it's a good question. I think, as you definitely know, and I think as anyone who has ever run their own business knows, it's near impossible to be giving a business your all and to be really in it, which in our instance, we both needed to be, and I definitely needed to be, and also kind of have your head up above the sand looking for what else might be out there, what might be on the horizon. So for me, I think I was really clear that I knew I was never going to be able to sit there doing the job and work out what my next challenge was. But I think also at the same time, I was also really clear that I didn't want whatever my next step to be reactive to what I had been doing. And again, especially running a business as intense as ours had been for the last 4 years, I didn't want my next step to just be like a flippant decision based on A, again, what I've been doing, but B, exactly like you said, that kind of, that fear of not having a title, that fear of not being on the treadmill like everybody else.
Not having a script, right? To your earlier point, not having the script. You know, you bump into someone or you're introduced to someone. Like, what do you do? I've stopped asking people that question, by the way, just as a brief aside. If I meet someone new, I say, what are you doing that's most exciting at the moment? You know, because people don't want to talk about the day job either. You know, it's become so tedious in some respects.
No, totally. I literally do the same thing. I think the question I ask people is, I'm like, what do you fill your time with? Because I don't really care like if it's a job or not, like just whatever your answer to that is, whether it's your hobby or whether it's not, it doesn't matter. Because at the end of the day, we're just trying to get a bit more information out of someone in context as to who they are. But I think it was a really interesting point. Like I found myself, you know, at drinks, at dinners, whatever it is, suddenly with not a very clear answer when people said, so what do you do? The answer's kind of like, well, nothing. And I think it does definitely challenge that idea of where your value comes from, where you get that validation from in your life. And I think that's, to me, that's like a really key central element to this entire story is, where is your identity? Where does it lie? Because if it lies in the wrong places, or if it lies, let's say not wrong, if it lies in certain places, that would make this step a lot harder than if it lies in others. And so, yeah, a very, very interesting time where suddenly you find yourself floating a little bit. That has been, honestly, the hardest thing I've done over the last 3 months is just to try and remain floating and not accidentally become productive again, because there is so much, you literally feel like you're watching the world keep running away from you. And I was not lucky. I decided when I knew I was going to step back, I decided to start up with a new therapist, which is a decision I'm so glad about, because she's helped me just honestly, more than anything, just stay accountable to that decision I made 3 months ago that I didn't want to be doing anything immediately. Because every day you wake up thinking, oh, like, do I need to be doing something, at least at the start? And you keep wanting to revert on that decision and become productive again. But it's actually it's not for the reasons for yourself. You want to do that. At least in my instance, I wanted to do that because I wanted to appear as something for other people, I think, or I wanted to kind of negate some of the fears and anxieties I was having. So it was hard to kind of sit there and do nothing, but I think easily one of the most valuable things I've ever done.
So to that point, and this is such incredible learning for other people listening and watching, and it's so amazing that you're sharing this, because you made an active decision. You owned a decision to take a bit of time, and you organized yourself so that you could do that. You know, it wasn't one day to the next, because of course everyone's got their cost of living and their other considerations. So you organized yourself so you could do this. Everything, you know, we are creatures of habit, right? How did you, after quite a number of years of being chained to the bumper, you know, working flat out, how did you physically and practically and emotionally adjust? Because it's one thing going, you know, reminding yourself each morning, I don't need to rush off to a meeting, or I don't need to do this, or don't need to feel. What practical steps, and of course you had your therapist and continue there, but what practical steps did you make that got you into a slightly different headset a few weeks down the line? Like what were the practical things you did to allow yourself a space, to allow you not to be conditioned by the societal need for a very clear architecture to operate within, a very clear script, a title, and all the rest of it?
Yeah. I think I am in a privileged position financially. That means I don't need to be working right now. And that probably is the biggest one that just literally affords you to be able to take that gap and take that space. And I am just lucky that that is one of the things, for whatever reason, was imprinted in me, just around living within your means, so that when these kind of moments come, you are ready and you are in a position to be able to take advantage of them and not be, like you said, continually chained to the bumper because you have a lifestyle that needs paying for. Obviously, I took up some random fun things, like my garden's never been in a better state, let's just say. My room's never been tidier. There's all those things where there are some practical things you do. But I think really what's been super interesting is that I think I started 3 months ago. I definitely subscribed to the idea that everyone needs a purpose. And so, you know, I think when I initially kicked off, I had these, even though I was like, I'm not going to be busy, I had these clear things down that I was going to like learn more about AI to understand the world we were moving into. I did have these things that did give me a bit of purpose. And I think that still is something that I've been kind of dismantling as I've gone on over this 3 month period, which I actually think you need a lot less purpose than you think you need.
Right. Why is that? This is such an interesting point. And by purpose, you mean sort of endeavors that we focus on, i.e. my purpose at the moment is to learn about whatever or study another language or develop a skill, right? That's what we're talking about here, as opposed to our, you know, inner purpose in life, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I think, those more, especially work-related purpose, let's say, but it could be anything. And I think for me, I think what that purpose often did was it stopped me having to sit in like the total silence and the total reality of a situation and deal with whatever comes up in that. Because if I have a purpose, then there's always something I can be waking up and doing. So I will wake up I'll go to sleep at night thinking, okay, well, my brain's busy thinking about the next few things that I have to do, which is quite nice. It means it's not thinking about other stuff I don't want to be thinking about. And then I can wake up in the morning and again, I have this thing that I'm working towards that constantly gives me those little dopamine hits, I guess, as I'm taking the steps to get there. Whether those dopamine hits be coming from the information, coming from the fact that I feel like the world now sees me as this educator, whatever those things are. And I think separating yourself from that is interesting because it does mean you just end up having to kind of sit in the total reality of whatever your situation is. And you do have to deal with a lot of those thoughts that I think, especially let's say when you run a business for 4 years, you don't have to deal with because you've got so much other stuff that you need to be busy with. And it's kind of as simple as that. It's like, some of the hardest stuff I've had to do over the last 3 months is just come to terms with a lot of the anxieties and things that have been going around my head that I've kind of been able to ignore for 4 years. The more I've done that, the more kind of pressure I've taken off myself. And I think that's probably the second biggest thing is there is so much pressure that I never realized I was putting on myself to be visible in being successful, like whatever it is. I think I think a lot of us don't even realize, because I don't think people would look at me and think of myself as someone who tries to, people wouldn't think of me as someone who's controlling, who is, you know, puts a lot of pressure on himself, but I massively was in quite a few different ways. And I think just being able to just really recognize the pressure means you then naturally kind of take it off yourself and just keep asking yourself like, well, what if I don't do that? Or what if I do that? You know, what if I do spend a day watching TV? You know, we're so conditioned as kids to feel really guilty about that, about not being productive with every day of our lives. We're like, I'm not going to lie, I've kind of earned a break. You know, I've had a very intense 4 years. And if I want to spend a day watching TV, I would feel so guilty about it. And it's taken, especially a lot of time with my therapist, I think, to just be able, honestly, just be comfortable with really, really basic things like that, that don't have to be me learning a new skill, don't have to be me actively doing like self-care and becoming more mindful. They can just be me wasting time because I can do that if I choose to. Really simple things like that, becoming okay with it. It's been more difficult than I thought.
Oh, I so get that. I also think that we are in a, you know, a productivity crisis in a way, along with being in a distraction crisis. People are obsessed with productivity. I think the UK is the least productive country in Europe at the moment by the normal metrics that one analyzes these things by. I think that, you know, there's more and more science around doing things that you love, putting, you know, prioritizing what you love, because, you know, as many will say, do what you love, the money follows, to provide for your life, your lifestyle, those that you need to support or whatever one's personal situation is, right? And I think in a way, it strikes me that part of what you've been doing with this active decision to have a pause is sitting in silence, you know? We are not used to sitting in silence without distraction, without white noise, without a reason to tear ourselves out of bed in the morning and start, you know, going down at high velocity, whatever high road or highway we're on. And that ability to unlearn some of those behaviors that we, to your point, we don't even realize that's how we're operating, right? And you know, we all know when we've been through a lot of work situations that can be high stress simply because of the nature of the work, you're almost in crisis mode the whole time, aren't you? Like it's physical. And you step out and you realize how much, you know, to your point, the pressure you put yourself under and so forth. What do you think, and this is a very unfair question, but I'm fascinated, you know, in this short time, because it isn't really that long that you've been opening up, sitting in silence and allowing your mind subconsciously to be more creative in a way, you know, profoundly creative, because that's all percolating, isn't it? Like you notice things more, you go on a walk, you notice, you know, you notice the colors, the experiences, even with your least recent trip, you know, driving through Italy, there are things that you see because your mind is not clouded with worries, servicing clients, all these different things that we have in the work life. Of course, there are worries in daily life outside work, but really in relation to what we're talking about here, what is the most important shift that you've noticed in you if you look back to, you know, a few months ago when you were full tilt to today?
Yeah, I think you mentioned a couple of, you know, we're in a productivity epidemic, I think you said at the start. I think we are also in a total boredom crisis. I think everything you just said to me, it all kind of stems down to this idea of boredom, where genuinely I feel like you are in your most creative state in some ways if you start from a position of boredom. And nowadays we never let ourselves get there ever. You know, if you get bored, like if you're even remotely close, you whip out your phone and you do something. And one of my friends actually gave me the saying where he was like, you know, you want to make sure that you're in a creation mindset, not a consumption mindset. And today we are just all in a consumption mindset all of the time. So I think one of the things for me, and it sounds kind of like boring being like, oh, you have to put yourself in a creation mindset, make yourself bored. And it doesn't have to be a boring thing. I just think it means it's, yes, you have to make some space and detach for sure from your phone more. From me, it's meant things like, I've deleted news apps off my phone. I was not really active on social media anyway, but like I've got rid of all of that stuff. YouTube, got rid of it so that you can't just end up in that just consumption state where, yes, sometimes take a day to watch TV because like you just want to have a break, but make sure you're making those spaces as well when you can, where you have the potential to get bored, because you might not, because usually your brain will just start filling spaces. But I would imagine that Gen Z and whatnot probably find it a lot harder to fill those spaces themselves because they never had to, and they've just grown up in a world where you just never get bored. I think early on I thought that that is going to be a bit of a key thing to finding whatever is next. And I would almost say that in another way, like I've often sat there thinking, you know, the next idea of whatever I'm going to do, because it might not be just going and getting a job. It probably won't be. But the next idea of whatever I'm going to do, it's like I had this image that it was going to happen with me sat at a desk with a piece of paper writing out what I'm going to do next. And actually, it's been super clear to me now that the moments that those ideas come to you, it is never when you're doing that. It's never when you're sat on LinkedIn thinking, oh, what should I be doing? What's a good idea? It's when you're out there just experiencing the world, but in that way where you're not experiencing it in a way that you're just constantly saturated, where you're experiencing it. And then you're like stepping away for a second, giving yourself that breathing room to really like think and just percolate on everything that you're experiencing and going through. And that's when suddenly these just kind of what feel like little bits of magic do come to you.
Oh, 100%. And also, you know, it makes me think about the power of walking and movement. We're not meant to sit, you know, we're not sentient creatures. And I think we've just become so sort of immobile, which has meant that we've become a little bit, the people are sleepwalking, frankly, half the time, in my humble opinion. And, you know, when you get out and walk or have a walk with a friend or on your own and you don't even have your phone, that's when I also think you open up, you know, living in motion, living in movement, right? Things can come to you. And I think also that, you know, just allowing ourselves to do that more is so absolutely crucial. We talked a little while ago, Tom, about, you know, your focus was having no focus. And clearly you've made big strides on that, over this very short period. You know, the fact is, as we know, how we're living, how we're working, as we touched on earlier, has shifted massively. I think people are questioning why they work, what sort of work they do, what sort of life they live, right? And I suspect going through what you're going through too, it's about how do you own that? You know, what doesn't sit with you, what doesn't work with you, which is as fundamental as going, ta-da, this is the key thing, right? Which to your point is this laboratory-like experimentation, right? I love the idea of laboratory because you can try things out and it doesn't work and it blows up over there, but you come back to your desk and you have another little experiment and you try something new and it's not life or death most of the time, right? What do you... And I appreciate this a very short period, but we were talking about looking out to the horizon. Has your view on work for you in any way shifted since you started this new road, which in turn will probably inform how the next thing you do?
The answer is 100% yes, and I think I will be. I still don't know what the next stage is. It could be nothing. Could be something. I don't know. But I think I will. I genuinely think I'll forever be grateful that I've taken this time, because to kind of take a step back to your walking metaphor, when you start a business, it feels like you're on one of those treadmills, but like the treadmill's not on and you have to like push it to get that track moving, and you really have to push and push and push. And then towards the end, at the moment where I decided to take a step back, it's more like, okay, the treadmill's now on and you're just running to keep up with the treadmill, and you're not really sure why you're running anymore because it's been a while since you started. And I think everything in your life starts to kind of build around the idea that you are just running on this treadmill, even though you don't know why. And, you know, I know you and I have talked in the past about, you know, this example of somebody who was spending so much on to be able to do the work that they do that it didn't actually make sense, even though they got a lot of money, you're just surviving. And I think that's massively what the case was for me, where though I really enjoyed for a long period what I was doing, I think you end up building up a bit of a lifestyle out of the things in your head that you think you need, the things you think you want, that are actually being driven by the fact you are on that treadmill. And so for me, stepping off and having that space has, at least as I understand and think about it now, it's kind of helped me to understand, again, at least in this period, because we're ever evolving and changing our plasticity, like you're saying, but in this period kind of helped me to understand what my true base level is. So that, again, whatever decision I now make next, it's not based off what I think my needs are because of what I was doing. It's really based off the fact that, cool, I now know that when I don't have a clear purpose and I don't have this thing that I need to be waking up doing, I arguably wake up happier than ever before, and like genuinely with just a joy to just see what the day is going to bring and just go out there and do something. So I know I'm not, at least for now, dependent on this purpose for whatever, for my happiness and for whatever to get me essentially up in the morning, which is a nice thing to learn, because it means I'm not, it widens the scope a lot more for what it is that I potentially might want to go and do next. I think also financially, it helps you to restabilize and understand, okay, what actually is it that I need to be, that I want to be spending? Therefore, what is it that I want to be earning? Because I don't know about you, but I definitely still, even though I grew up with entrepreneurial parents, have this idea in my head of like, I need to be on a constantly increasing curve all my life of what my salary is. And sure, things like kids can come into it that mean you want to be earning more. But I think I've also been exposed to a lot of, let's say, more traditional industries, like people who are lawyers and whatnot, where they have this curve. So they almost start living ahead of, because it's such a clear trajectory traditionally, they start living the means of the next step while they're still in the means of the previous one, which means you kind of become trapped in this thing. And you think that that is what you need to be earning to live the life you need to be doing, because you do a job that's hard. You therefore need to spend X amount on holidays every year. And so I think, literally, to cope with the reality of what you're doing to earn that living. And so for me, just to kind of take a step back and realize this base level makes me super happy and I'm very okay with it, and I know what I need to sustain it, just kind of informs. And again, it widens the lens as to what I would have thought 3 months ago I needed to be happy and to kind of feel fulfilled and feel purposeful and whatnot.
Totally. And also, you know, to your point, there are so many of these societal norms are what I would call archetypes, you know, the expected modus operandi. And it's not necessarily true in any respect for every one of us or for each of us, because we've all got our own version that doesn't have to correspond, right? So Tom, I am so excited about everything that's going on for you. You know, this is a real voyage of discovery, both physically because you're out and about a bit and metaphorically, right? Is there anything today that you don't necessarily need to tell us all the details, but has anything come to you on this road so far where you're thinking, ah, that's worth exploring? I don't mean the concept for a new business or the perfect whatever, but just something where you're getting a little bit excited and you're going to look further into as you keep going on in the laboratory.
Yeah, I think quite a few things, I would say, which is funny looking back, because I haven't really thought and looked back and thought about this, but I think at the start, you suddenly feel, you just see this vacant space and you're like, oh God, what's going to fill that? But you just got to trust it comes. Like all of our brains are just full of random things. So the stuff definitely comes. I'd say, yeah, in two ways. Firstly, in the work sense, 100%, there's at least four or five things that have just come absolutely not through sat there thinking, what am I going to do? But just through just conversations you have with the most random people that suddenly just unlocks this thing that you may have been thinking about for years, maybe now's the time, or new ideas. So for sure, loads of that. But the other thing is that I've honestly just been able to rediscover, and it sounds kind of cheesy, but like reconnect with a lot of the things that I love doing previously that I haven't been able to do for the last 4 years. I mean, a massive one for me has been cooking. Like, I feel like I've been eating microwave meals or like pre-cooked meals for the last 4 years. And so just to be able to spend a day making one plate of food for myself is just so lovely. And it's not something I will ever go down, at least for now, and explore for work. But just to be able to get back in touch with that and just understand why I like it, why it was so great. And again, finding all those little things that you can make sure you kind of prioritize again moving forward and don't lose sight of.
Totally. And also, you know, that one, and you and I have talked about this, it's really those little rites and rituals that create our lives and the value that we give to things. So you're not tearing down the road, you know, grabbing a sandwich from Pret and throwing it down your throat. You know, it's the honoring that you are nourishing yourself, thinking about the ingredients, doing these things in a way that gives them the meaning they deserve ultimately, right? So Tom, to wrap today, I'd love you to tell me two things. You're surrounded by incredible entrepreneurs and role models. You've met many, many people along the highways that you've been down. What's the best piece of advice you've been given, and what is the piece of advice you would give to someone today, whatever age or stage they're at? But the crucial thing is they're looking ahead and they need to kind of let go of the riverbanks and swim a bit and explore, but don't quite know how to go about that. So firstly, advice to you, and then your advice to that person.
I would say the first more like generic piece of advice that I literally have written down at the top of my notes, because I really like it. It's the idea that I think it's the Navy SEALs use it, and it's that slow is smooth and smooth is fast, I think is how it goes. And that to me is just a really, really accurate statement about whatever it is that you're doing, whether you are having to do a new website, let's say for a company, whether you're sitting there deciding what you want to do next. And to be honest, I didn't even think it's what I was doing now, but I guess it's kind of what I'm doing now, taking slow, because you will always get to the end result, whatever that end result is, faster because you did it slower. Because we all know people who, you jump between things. I could jump into a job, jump into something else, might end up pushing on that treadmill, let's say, for a year before realizing, oh, I didn't really want to be doing that. I kind of just did it because I felt like I needed to be busy straight after I'd step back. So I think that's a massive one. Like, don't be afraid. Again, life's long. Don't be afraid. Take things slower. Really digest things, because you will end up getting there so much faster. It's a cheesy one, but definitely something I live by. And then the second one, it's not advice I've necessarily been told by anyone. But like you said, I think, look, I grew up with, very lucky to grow up with entrepreneurial parents. So I've been able to learn so much just by observing and watching them. And I think for me, something I was really mindful of when I actually started this agency as well was to never let my identity be too closely tied to what I do for a living, because it is so easy for that to let that happen. And in my experience, I have seen examples for people really close to me where that has been the case, and then things have gone wrong, because in the business world, as you know, things can be pulled away from you under your feet in no time. And if your identity is closely tied to that, then that can make for a seriously hard crash landing. It also can make for it, it can make it very difficult for you to step away from something that's not making you happy. Again, if you think that your identity and your value is too closely related to that. And I think for me, that's then also probably the advice I would almost give to somebody is whatever it is that you're doing, I think really look at it on paper and say, okay, how much of this do I actually is making me happy? To be honest, if you're even asking the question, the likely answer is that it's not. And look at how much of it you're doing because you actually want it or need it, and how much you're doing because it you think it's what is providing value to yourself, well, from yourself to those around you. Because I think the dismantling and the separation of those two things is what will allow you to also be really brave and do scary things, because you know your value and you know your identity isn't tied to it. So if you want to go and start a business that fails, great. It's not going to change how your loved ones think about you. It's not going to change how you think about yourself. So it not only frees you up to do more adventurous, interesting things, but it makes it easier to step away from things. But also, yeah, I think generally less susceptible to very scary things happening along the journey as well.
And you know, to your point, of course, big stuff can happen in business and it's not always fabulous, as we all know, but it's not life or death. You're always going to get up tomorrow, find another way through. And, you know, I read some quote from Bloomberg the other day where he was saying he got fired in an era when no one got fired. He didn't know what to do. And he set up Bloomberg, you know, and he found a way through, right? And everybody, you know, takes a knock. Everybody has a failure, which, you know, your mother would call growth. And that is how we learn. Tom, it has been amazing to have you on the show today. Thank you so much. I am so excited about, you know, the days, weeks, and months ahead. And we're going to come back in a while and see where you've gotten to on the road.
Let's hope I have some more answers to some of the open-ended questions that are currently floating around. But no, it's been so lovely.
I will be coming back with lots of questions. No, it's such a pleasure. Thank you, Tom. Hi, everyone. Dee here. I hope you enjoyed this incredible episode with my amazing guest. I hope you're enjoying the series. We'd love to hear from you, so do DM me and tell me all your stories of second carving. Lots of love.